Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Real Scotland Blethers, the podcast of realscotland.com that's dedicated to covering all aspects of filmmaking in Scotland. I'm Jonathan Melville, and in this episode I'll be having a blether with Steve Carson, Head of Multi-Platform Commissioning at BBC Scotland, a role which sees him work across TV, radio and digital. Originally, I was keen to talk to Steve about the first year of the BBC Scotland channel, to find out more about the approach to programming on there, as well as on BBC Scotland's other TV channels, radio stations and digital platforms. But then COVID-19 hit. It's obviously a challenging time for everyone in Scotland's creative sector. So when the chance arose to talk to Steve, I was interested to hear how BBC Scotland is responding to lockdown. But I also wanted to chat about some of the other decision-making that takes place away from lockdown, about dramas like Guilt and comedies like Scott Squad, about some of the great documentaries that are on iPlayer, and about where things might be heading in the coming year. I should say that we carried out the interview over everybody's favourite video conferencing tool, Zoom, so the quality does vary at times. I started by asking Steve about his career to date.
I have an unusual background in that I've really kind of worked on broadcasting terms on sort of different sides of the house. So I've been a freelance producer-director, I've been a staff producer-director, obviously came up as a researcher and assistant producer. I've run my own indie in Ireland, about 8 or 9 years, a factual documentary-based indie. I've worked in Irish television as a sort of similar enough job to this, where I was commissioning and running in-house production for RTE television. Then I've been back at the BBC for the past 6 or 7 years, firstly in BBC Northern Ireland and then the past 2.5 in Scotland, where my current job is essentially kind of leading the teams that it's the fun stuff, really, that kind of work out what programmes get made and all the things that need to be done to make that happen.
Yeah. And I mean, the first thing I wanted to talk about was just what you mentioned there about making the programmes, but also just in the situation we find ourselves in. Obviously, we're talking during lockdown, and I wondered how you and your team have responded to COVID-19 and how quickly you were able to adapt your programming to this crisis.
I think the main thing is it wasn't just the team. What's really struck me is the whole creative sector in Scotland as a whole. Everything, you know, just turned on a coin. I think there's that cliche we bandy around, was Hemingway talked about bankruptcy being slowly and then very quickly. And the sort of COVID crisis felt like that. I can remember in January and February sort of reading things, looking at things going, okay, well, you know, I wonder what we'd do programming wise in that context. And then suddenly for everybody, it just hit us. And we went to kind of the pre-lockdown and then lockdown. And I think the main thing is we kept our channels of communication open. We immediately went out to the creative sector with a call for ideas for specific programming that could, you know, cover us, reflect what was happening right now. So I think there's some new commissions we put out, and many of them were on air within days or weeks of people pitching them. And I think that's a real tribute to the program teams involved. So we have a version of People's News, the Virus Diaries, where, you know, people all over Scotland are giving accounts of what's happening. I think on the more entertainment side, then Susan Calman's show, Socially Distant. Again, that in itself being, you know, an audience offer, a bit of distraction and entertainment during the lockdown, but equally, how can we reach out to creative sectors, people who are no longer getting gigs, musicians, comedians, and offer them something as well. So I think that's been really powerful. You know, we got involved in National Theatre Scotland with Scenes for Survival. Again, you know, artists, actors, writers contributing pieces that we're helping to support with Screen Scotland and National Theatre of Scotland. A whole host of other commissions. We're just about to start a piece called Shelf Isolation with Damien Barr. So I think one of the approaches we had with the sector is we said, you know, we're going to honour existing commissions. If they can't be made right now, we'll work out other ways to do it, whether that's delaying delivery and keeping our cash flow going. But Damien was due to do episodes of Book Club for us in May, and obviously that couldn't happen, so IWC, the company, came up with something slightly different. So that's Damien talking to authors and other people about what sort of culture they're consuming. So there's a whole host of things, really. New things happened. Then, of course, the other thing was with some existing commissions like Beechgrove and Landward and The News and Debate Night, how do we make them under lockdown? And that took a little bit of working through, but the production teams again came up with you know, Beech Grove at the minute is absolutely flying. And it's essentially the presenters, you know, self-shooting in their own homes, links around archives. So, like, a lot of things had to change really quickly. And what was really inspiring to see was that everybody just kind of ran towards the problems to fix them. One thing we did was, well, we'll need to keep the news service going. So under that old kind of educate, inform, entertain thing, going back to Reef, you know, you think, okay, inform, we definitely need to let people know what is happening. Educate, almost instinctively, when the schools close, well, what can we offer? So we went to do a bite-sized Daily Scotland offer on the channel, which obviously then mirrors what we do on iPlayer and online. So that instinctively, that's a good thing to do. We should do that. And that's educate. And then entertain, which I always thought sounded a wee bit weird. You know, when Lord Reith would be talking about entertainment, you could sort of see where that came from too, even from his sort of slightly Olympian heights, because we're having to go, well, if we just do news, what else are people going to get? Do we not need something else? You know, do we take all the music off Radio Scotland? Do we not do any more, you know, breaking the news? But then, you know, we need to entertain. And actually, I'm really, A, pleased that we kept the broad range going. It's a tribute to the people involved. But B, it just really clearly, it just made our mission kind of simple and clear, going back to educate, inform, entertain.
Yeah, I mean, those are very sort of simple goals, just those three words, but they mean so much, don't they, as you're saying.
And you've no idea how many focus groups away these mission statements the BBC's done in the past century to define our public purposes. But it was just great when push came to shove, we fell back on educate, inform, and entertain.
Yeah. And you mentioned there the virus diaries, which I've been watching, and I think they're fantastic. Just that way that you're able to get into people's homes and see what's happening in their lives. Has that been, what's it been like trying to pull that together and, you know, I suppose get a certain type of quality as well? I mean, they are, I suppose, in a way, rough and ready, but they're also quite a high standard at the same time. So what's that been like, putting that together?
Well, I mean, that's a team from Turn. So, and again, as an example of how, you know, everything moved quickly. So the day after lockdown, or the day after, we published a call for ideas saying we want ideas about how we can cover safely, how we can cover what's happening. So I think that was maybe the Tuesday, the Wednesday. It was commissioned on the Friday and it was on air within 2 weeks. So we had a number of good ideas in that area. We went with the People's News, which was an existing series we had done on the channel, but it had to be different. And I think, you know, conversations with Harry and the team at Turn is that People's News was, it was sort of, it had been a lighter program and it was people reacting to the news. This had to be more personal testimony and a broader range of characters. I think the big thing was it had to be people from all walks of life and all over Scotland. And like, I can remember saying to Harry early on, I said, you know, what this needs to be is the rushes of a documentary that in 10 years, when we look back at the year of the virus, you know, we've captured the moment and we've captured people's experiences. That was the sort of ambition. And I think they delivered it very well. And, you know, I think, again, talking to suppliers and producers about, you know, let's not worry too much about production values right now. You know, it's just important to get material there. But actually, that's been done user generated with a very high level of polish as well. So, yeah, I'm glad you spotted that. I think it's been one of the sort of key shows we've had. And of course, you know, obviously through our news operation, we have a huge way of covering what's happening. Radio Scotland, because my brief covers all services. You know, Radio Scotland again has gone virtually all live. The morning phone-in show has been hugely popular. You know, the kind of calls exponential. The afternoon show, which is primarily culture-based, has turned into a whole host of other different things there. We're doing the Make a Difference campaign. You know, it has been, always it's all happened quite quickly, but we actually take a step back now and look at the past 6 weeks. It's actually quite remarkable how much changed.
Absolutely. I mean, I have this term, which I'm sure you've got a better one, which I kind of call This Is Scotland Now, which is what the feel is of a lot of your programming before this crisis and now as well. But I just wonder, just sticking to the BBC Scotland channel for a wee minute, could you just talk about that approach and what is the term you would use rather than This Is Scotland Now?
Well, that's quite a good way to sum it up. I mean, I'm glad you picked up on that. So, I mean, when I came on board, the channel was a fairly blank, well, completely blank slate, apart from the Nine News bar. And, you know, I think what was great was it was given sort of fairly long leash to sort of think about, well, what should we do? There'd have been many different ways to do the channel. The safest way to do it would have been make it sort of quite highbrow, ABC One, you know, landmark history, documentaries, etc. And, you know, that would have been a very valid proposition, but, you know, other bits of the BBC do that as well. So what we kind of thought was, let's do something that's sort of adding value that's different. And then, like, very early on, it was just, well, we should do something that's capturing modern Scotland and all that means. As I say, not a channel that sort of ruminates on the meaning of Scottishness constantly, that, you know, the Scottishness comes from the people on it and the range of things we do. But one that could sort of tackle, you know, what is happening in modern Scotland now? There's a very vibrant creative sector, and that looks through into the media as well. How do we capture that? How do we bottle that? The cliche, commissioning cliche that I used early on was that it's on now and it's about now. So I think your one's actually a bit better.
Plus, you can have it if you want.
Plus, as someone from Belfast, I have problems with long vowel signs, so the word now doesn't really sound right when I say it.
Yeah.
But I think that was it. So, you know, we think the channel, again, it could have been a sort of almost single genre factual channel. We decided not to do that. We wanted to offer comedy and drama as well, as you saw with Guilt and other pieces. But, you know, every channel needs an organizing principle, particularly a digital channel, which it is. It's not, you know, it's not mainstream terrestrial. So I kind of felt, well, the organizing principle is modern Scotland, and that's a country which is outward looking. That's a country which has a huge amount of things happening in it, a country that's undergone change. So while it's contemporary, we do look back maybe 30, 40 years through the prism of social history. I think that's another thing about the channel, was that, you know, we want to tell people stories. We want people to tell their stories. Really not interested in kings and queens. And, you know, I've routinely rejected ideas about posh hotels and St Andrews and all that chocolate box version of Scotland that, you know, Channel 5 do very successfully, and they get an audience for it. So we kind of felt that we'll actually look at what's happening. And I think, you know, I think the figures are showing, particularly the audience skew, you know, it's a kind of a younger demographic than other BBC channels. It's a sort of more working class demographic, and that's been, you know, partly being brought in through sport. And bringing in, you know, what, it's quite technical, what's called unique reach, which is people who don't consume any other BBC television in the evening, consuming the Scotland channel.
Well, programmes like the, is it Falkirk Cowboys? Have I got the title right there? I love seeing things like that popping up. And you're right, it's a different way of looking at our past than just through, as you say, kings and queens and politicians, yeah. Maybe, or
we can do you know, the kind of deeper dive history on BBC One Scotland. That remains, you know, that's a really significant service for it. But yeah, I think, you know, if I had to pick, sort of, I think the channel's on the side of the many, not the few. So I'm passionate about social history as a documentary maker. I used to love doing that. We have done sort of different ways into politics. Like, we did I think the first commission I did was inside the IndyRef,
yeah,
back in 2014. But again, not doing it in a current affairs prism, but a very good filmmaker doing it, you know, first person testimonies, you know, who was in the room, who said what. So, and we've done Children of the Devolution, marking 20 years of devolution. So I think we always just try to say, what's the kind of channel way into that? You know, what's a different way of doing that? I think the audiences have responded.
Yeah.
I think just the other thing in the channel is that when I was coming into the job, I said, well, there's no point doing a standalone linear TV channel nowadays. It, you know, it needs to be bigger than that. So the fact that the team I manage, you know, we do all services, including iPlayer. What you've really seen since channel launch is a consumption of Scotland, BBC Scotland commissioned and co-commissioned titles, and iPlayer has more than doubled. So, you know, you think you can see the audiences on the channel, the sort of traditional linear audiences are strong, or above our targets, 2.3% share, which, you know, is very good going for a digital channel. But iPlayer is where people are seeing a huge amount of the content, which is great.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny sort of thing as a viewer. You know, we read a lot, or I certainly read a lot about programs being digital first or iPlayer first, but I tend to watch them on the TV anyway, so I wouldn't know where they came from. The fact is, they're on iPlayer and they're of a very high quality. To me, it doesn't matter if it's something that is maybe a 10-minute short just made for iPlayer, or if it was broadcast last night.
And we do that as well. We've had drama shorts on. We did Hings with Chris McQueer. We commissioned initially for iPlayer that then had a TV outing. So, as you say, in The Godfather, one hand washes the other. I think, you know, pushing all our services together, as BBC Scotland does, you know, slightly in advance of other broadcasters, I think it helps that. You know, like, fundamentally, you're thinking, how do we help the audience to find this? and you need to, you know, you need to be where the audience are. And if people are consuming things on iPlayer and non-linear platforms, you know, we've quite a big YouTube offering as well, you know. So again, because we're set up, there was no one just thinks about TV, there's no one just thinks about radio, some of those old traditional silos, that's all gone now.
And we can
help push pieces of content around to where people are. It is interesting, again, in the crisis, just about the power of old-fashioned linear TV, though. So our bite-sized Daily Scotland offering in the mornings, I mean, that's essentially building on Bite-sized, which has been a very popular digital offering for a long time. But there's something about being on TV just gives a different visibility. Where we're doing religious services, Reflections from the Quay. We did a mass there at Easter. And, you know, there's just a sort of, you know, frankly, there are a lot of people who just don't have broadband and aren't going to stream services, and just putting something on the television helps, particularly for an older audience, but helps just people find it. It does give it a bit more of a push.
Yeah. I mean, also just, I guess, sticking with that subject for a moment, the things like Scott Squad have had those spin-offs, which, again, I suppose, were they digital? Again, it's hard to tell sometimes because they are all there on iPlayer, but I think those 10-minute, like the Chief does, and the UFO, the paranormal ideas, great fun. Do you think you'll be doing more of that sort of thing?
I think that's a big part of the strategy is that, you know, you kind of build on the success. And again, you know, you make content for where people are. So BBC, this is a terrible corporate plug, but BBC Scotland actually, and this predates me, runs some of the biggest social media accounts in the BBC. In fact, one of the reasons why the channel was called BBC Scotland was because we have quite active accounts, social media accounts called BBC Scotland that we could link them to. So we commissioned pieces, the Scott Squad spin-offs like the Chief Dawes and the Investigates piece are done with that non-linear audience in mind. We can also then use that to kind of, if there's a new series of Scott Squad coming back, start to seed that out through social to let people know about the linear premiere. So it is all, I mean, I think it's been really encouraging in the past couple of years to sort of see the fact, you know, that when you join everything together, all you're really doing is helping audiences find stuff, and that you can commission things at the right duration for what they are, that, you know, not everything needs to be a 30-minute or a 60-minute or a 90-minute or in linear terms.
Yeah, and talking more about the more traditional films, let's talk about maybe some of the documentaries that have been on the channel recently. I mean, one of the reasons we're talking is because I was sent a press release which talked about some fantastic films that were coming up. And it feels like you've almost had a season of feature length documentaries made in Scotland, Scottish subjects, and maybe you could talk a little bit about those, and I guess maybe investment in some of those and the way that you invest, because I know it's not always just saying here's money or coming in at the start maybe with some production help, but maybe you could talk a bit about that.
Yeah, I think there's a strong commitment on all our services, and this is, you know, building on the work that you did over a number of years. It's a very strong documentary sector in Scotland, which I would have sort of clocked when I came in. So there's a number of different ways. I mean, again, it's slightly, most channels don't do this, but again, we have a commitment to single documentaries. There's the Modern Life strand. Again, I think it's important because, you know, not everything needs to be 12 episodes long, and, you know, while you are from a channel point of view always looking for returnable series like Inside Central Station and things, you know, I think good single stories well told are really powerful. So we have the Modern Life strand there and some, you know, recent standout pieces there. There's the Scotland May Contain Strong Language piece which John McClaverty did, which I thought was great, both the way the treatment with Corbisset and just subject matter.
It was good fun.
Yeah, well, that's partly maybe having an outsider's view, because it just struck me, because every piece of swearing in Scotland I have to kind of look at before transmission. I just said to David Harran, our factual commissioner, I said, people in Scotland swear an awful lot. I mean, I'm Irish and we swear a lot, but there's something in Scotland. So when John pissed that, you thought that's absolutely spot on. So that's, again, a way of looking at Scotland, a way of looking at Scotland's past, a way of getting under the skin, but not in a panorama sense. So strong single films. I think the Brief Encounters film we did a little bit like Virus Diaries, just over many people telling their stories on the train. That's a beautiful piece of work. Feature documentaries, then, I think another advantage the channel provides is that it's our own schedule. You know, we can run 90-minuters in a way that's very difficult to run in the old system of sort of opting in and out of BBC One and BBC Two, where, you know, you've only got junctions of an R, really. So I think, again, because part of our ambition is to be outward looking and tell broadly international stories, that was attractive to me. And then because they tend to be internationally co-funded, I think what we try to do is that we can be an early tick to help people get other funding, and Screen Scotland have been very supportive as well, and other broadcasters. So, you know, we can't support everything. We have to kind of, we have to choose. You know, I think as the press release, which we were looking at, that the Hilda drew up, you know, it was a deliberate statement of intent on our opening night, on launch night, that we put Ne Passa Ran on, which was, a very strong documentary, a strong story of Scotland playing a role in an international event. And you've seen that through since with a whole host of things. The Film Festival, Glasgow Film Festival this year, you know, two premieres, Pictures from Afghanistan, and then Flint. So it is something we're very keen to support, and we think the audience value it.
Yeah. And I guess just following up on what we've been talking about with those different lengths and different approaches that people can now take to what they're making, because they could be 3 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes. Do you get people coming to you, filmmakers, I guess, or production companies coming to you saying, here's something we've maybe not tried before, what do you think? And you can obviously then say yes or no, or let's think about it. But do you get people just giving you different ideas that you'd never thought of before?
Yeah, and I think
when it comes to format, length.
I think one of the sort of trends really in sort of creative program making, filmmaking, is sort of duration's no longer so strict. I mean, you're seeing that from the podcasting side. You're seeing that, as I say, we can commission pieces into iPlayer that can be, you know, any duration. I'm a great believer in sort of things being the sort of, you know, as long as they need, but no longer. So, you know, there's also a little bit of creative discipline about not saying, oh, this needs to be a 90-minute film. When does it? You know, I've seen more things that are too long than too short. There is a discipline in, you know, it's like the three-act structure in a play. There's a discipline in sort of saying, here's the parameters of what I'm working in, and here's the world I want to create within. But we definitely have space to play, even on the linear side now, with duration. And of course, all our non-linear pieces, from the social to the homepage to iPlayer, podcasting, is, you know, we're no longer stuck in that, you know, it needs to be 29 minutes, it needs to be 59 minutes, and that's your lot.
Scheduler,
at least our scheduler, will kill me for saying that, because it's much more convenient than things are, certainly.
Yeah. Do you think there's almost a pathway? I mean, I've been looking at your some of the pages on the website that are talking about what you're looking to commission. So it goes from things that are things like BBC Social, very short, to, of course, longer programs, series and films. Do you think there's almost a pathway for filmmakers these days to follow? Not saying just the BBC is the only way to do it, but one way could be to start with those 30 seconds or 90 seconds clips and build up.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's something that we feel we can offer. And you should say the BBC is only part of it. The creative sector in Scotland is obviously goes well beyond us. And we are, you know, one of the players in it, but we're only one. So yeah, I think the advantage of sort of having radio, online, social, TV, all together, one content pot, one team, is that we can build those pipelines. So, you know, you can start a piece supporting somebody with an eye and a bit of talent through short form, whether that's the social. And we've seen, for example, two people came through the social. You now do Roaming in the Wild as a sort of half hour on channel. The channel itself is a stepping stone. You know, deliberately, it's a space to play and try new things. And if it doesn't work, you know, Tony Hall doesn't need to resign. I might need to resign, but, you know, we deliberately, you know, we always said early on, and it's easy to say this, but, you know, like, if everything we put on the channel works, we're not taking enough risks. So, you know, not everything's going to work. And I think it is, you know, it is a space to try things that it's not the pressure of BBC One Scotland, for example.
Yeah.
You know, and again, just even on that, you know, one of the channel staples now, View from the Terrace, came out of people who were experienced creatives from sort of marketing advertising point of view, but they hadn't made a frame of television. And we commissioned, I think the first commission was 20 episodes from them. So that's a sort of a pipeline of talent into the overall business side that maybe wasn't there. And if we could do a wee plug for them, so the View from the Terrace, as I say, is the first ever broadcast piece they did. And in the Broadcast Awards, they came runners up in the sport category to like they beat the Ashes and the Six Nations, you know, from Sky Sports and BBC Sports. So that was very channel as well. So sort of like, you know, we're the kind of plucky underdogs, we think.
Yeah, absolutely. When you mentioned their podcasts, which I'm a huge fan of, this is obviously a podcast, but I listen to them, I consume them all the time. What do you think might be coming up in that area?
We're doing a range of things. I think it's probably fair to say our podcasting strategy is still sort of developing. I think what we're trying to do is avoid just in the obvious pieces around crime, although there are opportunities there. We have a very successful series, Murder Case, which then became Murder Trial. So there are sort of, you know, deeper dive podcasts into some of those stories. So I'm always keen to sort of link one thing to another thing. But yeah, you know, you could boost your numbers just by doing true crime on our podcast offers. So we have done some of that. I mean, for us, podcasting sort of goes three ways. Some of it is directly linked to linear radio, like the Off the Ball podcast in Radio Scotland is absolutely ginormous, but it's clearly linked to the linear show. Then there's sort of spin-offs from linear shows, like I mentioned, potentially, you know, would you do something around another program as a sort of dreadful word, a brand extension. And then there's just pure podcasts that exist in themselves. And for us, you know, that would be kind of trying to look at younger skewed. Again, we're trying to surface our podcasts through BBC Sounds. We don't have a completely free hand there. You know, that's one of the issues about, you know, bigger kind of online platforms, iPlayer and Sounds. You know, you're trying to align our strategy to their strategy, but by and large, you know, we work together very well. So we're keen to see the importance of it. I think, you know, live radio is still very important, but time spent for all live radio, commercial, BBC, wherever, it's falling, and the podcasting is definitely making a part of that space. I mean, I spend, you know, more time than I did obviously 5 years ago listening to podcasting than I did before.
And have you ever talked, I mean, maybe you don't want to say, I'm asking about meetings and things, but things like Scott Squad, even could that even end up as a podcast? Has that discussion ever happened, or is that not likely? Is it mainly just going to stay TV?
It's an interesting idea. That one specifically hasn't come up. I mean, I say we're always looking for a way, as you know, I drive everyone bonkers about joining things together, you know. So even Susan Calman's socially distanced show, we commissioned to sort of, you know, get us through the lockdown. So the Chief Mickelson sort of appearing in that.
That's right, yeah.
And again, that's sort of joining together. Actually, he before all this happened, had quite a good line about, you know, the police trying working from home. And it just didn't work. So actually, you know, that's sort of perfect from the lockdown point of view. But no, I think, and I think, you know, you mentioned Scott Squad there. I think, again, there's been a strong comedy tradition in Scotland. So we're kind of building on that. And again, sort of, as you know, Still Game is now gone. And, you know, we're never going to be able to replace something as special as that. But we put, you know, TV comedy singles out there beginning of this year in January on BBC One. And then from that, we've picked the Scots as a sitcom we're going to do. So I think we're constantly sort of trying to do different flavours of every genre. So the Scots would be kind of a broad mainstream sitcom from Robert Florence. But then equally, Robert as well, of Burniston fame, he did a channel show called The State of It, which again was sort of trying to be sort of scabrous satire of the world today, including in the recent series, a very funny piss take of podcasts. Like a podcast within a podcast within a podcast.
Right. A podcast about podcasts, yeah. There's actually, those exist, of course they do.
Well, it was about all the guests thinking it was their podcast, was essentially the gag, yeah.
Right,
and everyone else was a guest on their show.
Right, yeah. And just talking about things like Still Game and the idea of returning dramas and comedies, maybe not just one-offs. Guilt was kind of promoted really as a one-off at the time. Do you think that might come back? Do you have any other shows that are not just going to be there for six episodes or five episodes and then gone? Do you think they might, those returnables, like a Scottish Line of Duty or something like that, they'll run and run?
I think, I mean, you've seen there recently, it was funded centrally by BBC Drama, The Nest and pieces like that.
That's right,
elements you're looking at. And of course, Shetland's still a big show and a returner.
Of course.
Like, you know, I think, I always, again, it's like it's sort of things should be the length they need to be. And sort of like again, from broadcasting point of view, you're always looking for returners and things that can sort of be 2, 3, 4, 5 series if you can afford them. But yeah, I think there's a beauty in something just doing it and not overstaying your welcome. So that's a very political answer, I guess.
No, it's hard to, yeah. I don't want you to give away all your secrets either, but
I think things can be successful if, even if they're not sort of 7 series long. Actually, in my previous job in Northern Ireland, I was involved on the line of duty side and very far removed from it, but it sort of fell on our patch. And that's actually made in Belfast. And it was just amazing to see a show grow, from some series 2, I think was the first one in Northern Ireland, that became, you know, to see something going from cult hit to big hit. Of course, had Adrian Dunbar in it to keep the Northern Irish end up.
Keep the locals happy, yeah.
Increasingly outlandish expressions like sucking diesel and things like that, so that was all good to see.
And a bubble up the Leffy, was that one of them?
Yes, that was it. He actually did that as a bet, Adrian. He it wasn't in the script, so he said, I'm going to use up the Lagan in a bubble, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it must be, crime shows, this is just thinking here, there's so many crime shows out there. And it was nice to see with Guilt that just that different spin on it. There wasn't the focused on the police, but actually not a spoiler, hopefully, for people who have not seen it, but focusing on the guys who done it. That was just a nice twist, I think.
Yeah, well, it was, from the, Neil had done a draft of Guilt when I'd started, which I read, and, just straight from the get-go, you thought, this is an incredible piece of writing and incredible characters, and had I think Fargo-esque is what people have said, but it felt very rooted in Leith, but equally had Ruth Batty is one of the actors, and it said, it's not like something, after it remade, it's not like something the BBC does. And I thought, right, well, that was the sort of spirit we were trying to capture. I think Neil himself, having come through a whole variety of different backgrounds as a writer, just had brought a really beautiful eye to it.
Okay, well, I don't have too many more questions. Our time is running out. I don't have you for much longer, but I just wondered, is there anything that you maybe wanted to talk about that is coming up that you're particularly proud of? I'm sure everything is something you're proud of, but anything you maybe wanted to highlight, especially in this world of lockdown, that people should maybe keep an eye out for?
I think, our normal schedules, it depends sort of which audiences. I think some of our traditional heartland audiences are finding Beechgrove Garden and Landward, hugely comforting at this time. I think Susan Calman's been bringing in a broader audience. We have a series coming up in May with Billy Connolly, and sort of him telling his story, going back through his archive, but he's telling his story, it's kind of telling Scotland's story as well. I think that's an important piece. I think looking at feature documentaries, there's a big piece there, Stephen Vince. And that Monsters coming up in early May on Channel. I think, beyond that, clearly, we're missing live sport. I think the whole country is, but we've been classic matches. I think the next head scratcher is Transmits just being cancelled. Traditionally for the summer, the festivals will be very important for us, but I think everybody in these times, the creative sector and beyond, we're all just trying to keep one step ahead of events just from our point of view, UC Scotland, just trying to provide as big a range of services as we can and kind of stick to our guns with what we're trying to do.
Yeah. And if people did want to, filmmakers or podcast makers or anyone creative, if they wanted to get in touch with one of your team, I know the multi-platform team exists. We haven't gone into much detail, though I know everything we've talked about kind of comes under that area. But is there a way people can still pitch ideas, or if people wanted to do that, how would you recommend?
There's a whole series of sort of doors and windows. Structurally, we're not set up to take just ideas from members of the public and sort of on commissioned scripts. There are ways in, though. The BBC runs the Writers' Room, which is a Scotland base as well, for sort of unsolicited scripts and helps develop new writers. We work, I know you're involved in the Scottish Documentary Institute. We've supported the Right Here, Right Now, First Time Filmmakers Documentary Scheme. We've just had our first few through, and we've opened up again for more. Louise Thornton, who's one of our commissioners. I mean, it's everyone's job to support and develop talent, but Louise got a particular new talent focus outside the Scottish Documentary Institute scheme. She's also got ring fence money for single documentaries from new filmmakers. Again, first week of the channel, we did a really lovely piece from The Fly, I think it is, called Sink Your Skin, about stone skimming, which is like a brilliantly made half-hour documentary. And that was their first documentary piece. So, I think, you know, our doors are open, and there's just numbers of different ways in. Again, you mentioned social, sort of slightly more user-generated content. I do think part of our job is to help bring through next generations. And then that's not just people just starting. You know, how do you get somebody from one place to another place? How do you get them from being, you know, maybe having made shorter pieces into making their first full-length piece? I think that's something we can do across all the services we have. It's a big commitment. And we do it because, frankly, you want to get the best people and the best ideas, you know, and then the audiences ultimately benefit from that. I mean, that's fine.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I'll leave you in peace. Let you get back to more Zoom calls with colleagues, I'm sure. Thank you for taking the time to chat today.
No, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.
And that's all for this episode. You can find out more about the podcast on Facebook and Twitter by searching for Real Scotland, or you can email me at realscotland@gmail.com. If you like the episode, please consider leaving a rating on iTunes so I know whether you want more. You can also check out more episodes at realscotland.com/realscotlandblethers. Thanks for now, and until next time, stay safe.